The Song of Solomon is a great book. We've had a couple of lessons on it already that have brought us down to chapter 2, verse 8. My name is Stephen Medford. I am your host this morning for the Monday edition of Mornings for the Master. And if you remember, in chapter 1, we looked at this woman's desire for this man because this man had good character, a good name, and everyone loved this man. And we've been referring to the woman as the Shulamite, or the maiden, and the man is Solomon. Everyone loves this man, and we talked about in verse 7 from chapter 1, how she was not willing to give in on her morality, not willing to compromise her morality in any way with this man, and he admits the same. Everything they do is open, and they have no secrets, and they are constantly complimenting each other. You are fair, you are handsome. When chapter 2 begins, from chapter 1, verse 6, we see that she didn't want people looking at her because she was somewhat ashamed of her appearance. When chapter 2 begins, she says, "I am a rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys." She is starting to have self-confidence because of this love of this man. And he says, "Compared to all other people, you are a lily among thorns." So we talked about that. And she says she finds shade and delight in the fruit. He is an apple tree to her that she can rest in. She is comfortable there. He protects her. He provides for her. And the end of that section that we looked at, verse 7, there's a charge that we should not do any type of sexual activity before you can, before it's legal, before marriage. "I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the does of the field, do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases." We're going to see that a couple more times in the book. So that is an important verse. Don't start things that you can't finish. And so for this lesson today, we're going to look at chapter 2, verses 8 through the end of the chapter. And it reads, "The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes, leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, he stands behind our wall. He is looking through the windows, gazing through the lattice. My beloved spoke and said to me, 'Rise, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth her green figs, and the vines with her tender grapes give a good smell. Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. O my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the cliff, let me see your face, let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Catch us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. My beloved is mine and I am his. He feeds his flock among the lilies. Until the day breaks, until the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountains of Bether." So there we have the text we're going to cover today. And obviously you can see the excitement in all this. I believe that this is the proposal, although some people think he's just asking her to come out on a date and walk through the springtime. But there are some things that we can be assured of. The verse starts out, verses 8 and 9. "The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes, leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, he stands behind our wall. He is looking through the windows, gazing through the lattice." And so what are some emotions that describe what's going on here? I think it's easy to see, isn't it? This man is eager. He is excited. Nothing is going to keep him away from his beloved. As we mentioned earlier, the woman is speaking through the majority of this book. And so it is the woman that is talking about the excitement of the man. And I think this shows that she is equally excited that he is acting like this. The woman is talking, and the punctuation is not inspired. And so when we read verse 8, the voice of my beloved, the New King James that I'm looking at has an exclamation point after that. The voice of my beloved. But I wondered, maybe it should be a question mark. As if, is that what I hear? As if she's been intently listening, waiting on the day that he comes. Is that the voice of my beloved? I just think it's interesting to think about things like this. How does she say this? Imagine what she is feeling. It seems she may be looking out the window to see him. Is that the voice of my beloved? And then she sees him leaping on the mountains. Or she might just be imagining this scene, thinking about the excitement of her husband, as some people think. But we see the excitement, the anticipation, the willingness, the eagerness to go and be together. There is nothing that is going to keep this man away. She compares him to a gazelle or a young stag. I think that's interesting. These animals travel over the roughest obstacles without care, with much ease. They are known for their grace and they are known for their speed. I kind of think it's interesting. Once you have a woman, you know, how do you act? When you're dating, you use the most polite phrases. You act with manners. And then during marriage, it seems like these things tend to go away. You can start being crude. But we are to be graceful, like a gazelle or a young stag, not like a bull in a china closet. So we see that because of his excitement, he is going to bound these things, these obstacles, whatever it takes to get to him. And throughout this, I tried to think about the relationship that the church has with Christ. Christ desires a relationship with his people. And he had to overcome great difficulty, a great obstacle, sin, in order to have a relationship with us. And he did that. He died on the cross. The eternal God gave his life for us and overcame the obstacles because nothing was going to keep him away. This is the love Christ has for us. This is the beginning of the relationship here, but it can remain throughout the relationship if it is cultivated. There's a lot of jokes about people talking about not getting married. Advice to people thinking about marriage, don't. Things of that nature. People get married, you know, it's all downhill from here. It doesn't have to be that way. You can keep this excitement, this desire to be together, if you cultivate it, if you want it to work. Men should not want to go to the bar after work. They should want to come home to their wife. The wife and the man both need to act in such a way that the other desires to be with them. And that way, the relationship will be cultivated. The man is motivated here, leaping upon the mountains, skipping on the hills. You want to marry someone who is motivated, who is active, who is not slothful, not lazy. This is the type of person you want. But notice what motivates him. It is her. It is as if she's the reason for his doing everything. I think about songs. You remember the song that Chicago sang? You're my inspiration. You bring meaning to my life. Bryan Adams, everything I do it for you. Garth Brooks sang the song Shameless. I'll do anything for you. This is the motivation. The wife is what motivates the man. Not for everything, but she is a great motivation in his life. There is no doubt about that. Consider the reason that Jesus lives, what motivates him to do the things that he does. It is his love for the church. In Romans 14 and verse 9, it says, "To this end, he both lived and died, that he might be Lord of the living and the dead." In Hebrews chapter 7, verse 25, I love this verse. "He is able to save them to the uttermost, those who draw near to God through him, for he ever lives to make intercession for them." Consider that. He is living for the purpose of making intercession for us. He loves us. So we can see the motivation of Christ to do all that he did was for us. The motivation of the man in much of his life is for the woman. And to women, I think you need to understand your influence of the men and don't take advantage of it, but allow it to be used for the glory of God. Looking at the end of verse 9, I kind of think this is interesting. "He stands behind our wall. He is looking through the windows and gazing through the lattice." Again, this shows anticipation. The words that are translated looking and gaze, the word looking here means to look with contemplation. You're thinking about it. It literally means to pierce. So he has fixed his gaze on something and is reflecting on it. He is meditating on it. While the second word that's translated gaze in the New King James literally means to twinkle. And so in my mind, as I looked at these things, I was thinking he's jumping back and forth, appearing in these windows. But when he catches a glimpse of her, he is mesmerized and contemplating this looking, darting back and forth, trying to get a gaze, but then he sees her. That's what I think about that. It could be that he is knocked and he just can't wait for the door to be open. He is wanting to see, wanting to catch a glimpse. Or it could be, some people think he might be a little bashful, might be scared to knock. You're starting a relationship. Sometimes we are bashful and rightly so, nervous to progress. That is natural, and I think that is right. But both of these verses, 8 and 9, show his eager desire that he has, and I think she, because she is saying these things, to be together. And that is a good thing. That should be cultivated. But don't progress sexually, of course. She is the one speaking, dreaming of this, excited about this. She probably doesn't see him doing this, but imagines all this in her mind. I don't know how easy it would be to spot someone on the hills far away and jumping the hills and so forth. I don't know. Maybe she is looking out the window and seeing this. I've gone back and forth on that. But we have the idea of eager excitement, and it doesn't need to be lost in marriage. While you can't always control your circumstances, you can control your feelings and your emotions. It's with difficulty, but you can always control your actions. And again, sometimes it's difficult. But it's easier to act your way into a better way of feeling than to feel your way into a better way of acting. I get that from Dr. Laura. I'm going to give her credit for that phrase. It's easier to act your way into a better way of feeling than to feel your way into a better way of acting. When the desire is gone, you act in such a way that your spouse will want to be with you. That desire can come back. Look for someone who brings energy to a relationship and doesn't drain it. Going on, verse 10. "My beloved spoke to me, 'Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing has come. The voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth her green figs, and the vines with her tender grapes give a good smell. Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away.'" So it's obvious this is springtime. And like I said, some people say he's asking her to come on a date. It's beautiful outside. Let's go for a walk. It's lovely out here. We need to do things like this, of course. One person suggested that going on a walk is the greatest way to get to know people because you're out in the open still. You're not in a place where you can be tempted to do things that are wrong. But you're also alone enough where you can talk about intimate matters and things that you need to be talking about. There are dates, being together with people that are just for fun, but then sometimes you date one person exclusively and you are going to expect things from that person, and there is going to be an escalation. You are going to advance in knowing that person, and that escalation is going to end at marriage if it's not broken off. So that seems to be what this is. They want to get to know each other. Or as I see it, I kind of think this is a proposal for marriage. Come away with me and live with me forever. The winter is past. The rain is gone. The seasons, I think, automatically show the cycle of life. Winter, everything dies, seemingly dies. But in spring, everything comes back to life. And so this is a time of new life. I want to start our relationship together. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of singing has come. The voice of the turtle dove is heard in the land. The turtle dove was a migratory bird. And when you could hear the turtle dove again, you knew it was springtime. And so all these things are pictures of spring. New life. Let's start our new life together. And so this seems to me to be a proposal for marriage. And then, verse 14, he says, O my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the cliff, let me see your face, let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. So again, we have the idea of how much they enjoy each other and their desire to be together. We've already looked at earlier in chapter 1 where he says you have dove's eyes, this word for dove. Oh my dove, he calls her, a symbol for love, a symbol for peace. She is gentle. They are very beautiful. And so he calls her a dove. It seems that, again, as we were saying, he might be bashful, standing behind the walls, looking at this woman. Here, she might be bashful. She isn't coming out too quickly. In the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the cliff. And he says, I want to see your face. She is hiding. Or, more so, if this is a proposal, he is asking her to start her life with him. She has been at home with her mama and her daddy, and she has been very comfortable there. She is safe. She's at peace. And he is asking her to leave that and start a new life with him. He needs to make sure he can provide for her. Two people can live as cheap as one if one goes hungry and the other goes naked. I heard that from Tommy Nelson teaching on Song of Solomon. But he's asking a lot for her. Be sure he can hold up his end of the deal by providing for her the security that she needs. Throughout the Bible, the cleft of the rock is talking about a secure place, a place of shelter. Isaiah 2:21 and Exodus 33:22 are two places that I wrote down. And so she is safe and secure. And he needs to make sure he can provide that safety, that security for her as well. He says her voice is sweet. They enjoy talking together. I think this is important because the only way to get to know someone is through their voice, through their words. Words are who people are because they carry the ideas of the mind. This is what we love about a person or we hate about a person. Their mind, who they are, their ideas, their expressions, their physical bodies. Once the spirit leaves, once the mind leaves, it's gone. The mind is who we are. And so he says, your voice is sweet. Is your voice sweet? Do we speak nicely to one another? They needed to talk to each other in order to get to know one another. If we love a person, we will love to hear them talk. We want to know more about them. We want to be more intimate with them. Their relationship with each other is important, and they want to grow it. When we are trying to get to know someone, we need to think about, what are they like? What is the relationship with God like? What is important to them? Do they put the church first? Do they put God first? How do they treat their family? When you become common to that person, you're going to be treated differently. When a husband and wife first get married, they're going to love each other. But if you look at the way a person treats his brother or sister at home, the way they treat their mom and dad at home, when they live with them for a number of years, that's how they're going to treat you once they are common with you a number of years. We need to know these things about them. How do they spend their money? Where do they spend their money? Will they admit that they are wrong when they are wrong? You don't want to live with someone who never admits wrongdoing. Are they lazy? Are they easily offended? Do they speak encouragingly to other people, or do they put other people down? We need to always make sure our voice is sweet, that people want to be with us, that our spouse always desires to be with us because we keep our voice sweet. That's important. The other thing that he says is your face is lovely. Some translations say your form is lovely. To me, this is not so much the idea of what she looks like, but the word is her appearing. I think it's her presence. He enjoys being with her. I think it's important that you first see someone. When you first see someone, you develop the atmosphere right then. First impressions, the first few moments of an encounter, I think can change the mood for the entire time that you're together. I've heard a number of counselors say when you first come home from work, the wife should let you wind down, not bombard you with a bunch of questions or bring complaints. Make the first few moments very sweet, and that sets the mood, and then you can deal with the things of life. And so her appearance, when she appears, when her presence is there, that's what he delights in. That's the way I see this. And so she says, or he says, you know, come be with me. And I personally think it changes in verse 15. I think this is what she says. Some people think it's what he says. The New King James Version that I'm reading says that her brothers say this. The only reason they say that is because the word catch us, is masculine plural. Catch for us. And so... you know that there's men in the group that are spoken to, and you know it's plural. When the group was divided, they always deferred to the masculine form and not the feminine, so there could be women in the group as well. So this could be the man talking, saying, let's catch for us the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. Let's go out on a walk. Let's hear your voice. Let's talk about things that we need to overcome in order for us to progress in our relationship. It could be him talking and saying this. This is what we need to accomplish while we go out together. But in my mind, it seems more natural that she might be saying this, because she is the one speaking in verse 16. And so he's saying, come with me. Let's go. Let's get married. I want to live with you. In my mind, that's what's going on. And she says, wait a second, we need to catch us the little foxes that spoil the vines. Our vines have tender grapes. I'm not so sure we are ready. So we don't know who says this. I tend to think it's the woman. I would rather it be the man, but we don't know. But it's important that the verb is plural. Catch us, catch for us the foxes. This is something that they were going to do together, no matter who's talking. The responsibility of catching the foxes would not fall on one of them or the other one. But they both are working together to catch these foxes. Well, what are the foxes? I think it's interesting, and we're going to talk about what the foxes are, but it doesn't say catch for us the lions or the bears. Not great big things, you probably wouldn't be attracted to someone who has major problems, or at least you shouldn't be attracted to someone who has major problems. In that area, there were lions and leopards that were a threat to human life. If these are seen in a relationship, we would naturally get out of them. But the foxes are small, and they're even cute. They don't seem like they're a great threat, and they were kind of more difficult to keep out of the gardens and stuff because of their size. They could get through the hedges, and they're cunning. So people are tempted just to ignore them. So these foxes would be little things in a relationship that maybe they get on your nerves, maybe you don't like. Often in a relationship, you will know when a red flag comes up. You have a red flag. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't marry that person, but that's something that needs to be dealt with because that person's not going to change. That is who you are marrying. And so you need to remember that. Catch the little foxes. If you try to ignore it or put it off, say we'll deal with it after marriage, that is a big mistake. These foxes are said to dig holes which would hurt the vines, uncovering the roots and so forth. The heat would dry out the vines easily if the roots were uncovered. And so our vines have tender grapes, and we don't need to be allowing foxes to get around these things. Also, it says that people said that the foxes would eat the grapes before they were ripe because it was a water source. But anyway, there are different things that we need to deal with before you want to get married. You need to make sure and deal with these things. As I said, we usually defer our problems, thinking that we can work them out later. Deal with them beforehand because they're only going to cause hardship and unnecessary tension later on. Be open and be honest up front with the problems. Work through them. If something is annoying to you, express that. You don't have to be mean about it. But maybe the person doesn't even know it's annoying to you. Maybe, you know, a lot of relationships, when things are done, for some reason the other person will assume that that person is doing it to hurt them. And it's not so. Express why you're doing certain things. Be open. Be honest. Little problems arise. Deal with them quickly. Consider Proverbs chapter 24, verse 27. It says, "Prepare your work in the street and get ready for yourself in the field. Afterward, then you shall build your house." Before you can be comfortable, you need to take care of business. Before you can build your house, you need to take care of business. And a couple verses later, it starts by saying, verse 30, "I pass by the field of the lazy person and over the vineyard of the person lacking sense. And behold, it was overgrown. All of it was covered with thorns, its surface with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. Then I myself saw, and my heart considered. I looked, and I took hold of instruction, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and your destruction comes upon you like an armed man." So we need to take care of business first. Catch the little foxes before you build your house. Is this man really going to be the head of the house? Is this woman really going to submit to me? Who's going to be in charge of the checkbook? Who's going to do the cooking, the laundry, the yard work? Are we going to have children? How many children? How are you going to discipline? There are all sorts of things that you can talk about, that you need to talk about, that need to be addressed. Things that you need to do to get to know the other person. We should understand that early in a relationship, the vines have tender grapes. However, we need to always treat the vines as if they had tender grapes throughout the relationship to keep the relationship good. Often in marriage, the little things that one might do for some reason, as I said, the other person might think they're doing them to annoy him. We need to be open and honest with one another before marriage and during marriage and resolve conflicts when they arise. I think a lot of times people would get along much better in a marriage if they just follow the rules that are given to every Christian and not just husbands and wives. Consider Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. Therefore, I, the prisoner of the Lord, exhort you to live in a manner worthy of the calling with which you are called. Live like a Christian. With all humility and gentleness, with patience, putting up with one another in love, being eager to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. In our relationships with one another, with anyone, and especially with our spouse, we need to be humble, gentle, patient, put up with, eager to maintain unity. Make the other person want to be with you, united with you. Ephesians 4, verse 24, therefore putting aside the lie, speak the truth, everyone with his neighbor, because you are members of one another. Again, this is for everyone with their neighbor, but we need to be speaking the truth. If something is bothering you in a relationship, open it up and deal with it. Now, I'm not saying every time something's bothering you, if something you can overlook easily, then overlook it. But if you can't get past something and it's causing you to act ill toward your spouse, open it up and talk about it. I think about Matthew chapter 7, where it talks about judging. We shouldn't judge one another, be open and honest. But when it talks about judging, it mentions that you need to deal with the things in your own life first. Realize before you get angry at your spouse or your fiance, whoever you're talking about, that you're not perfect either. You need to have patience with them because they have to have patience with you. And I think about Matthew 18, where it talks about if your brother sins against you, go to him and correct him. Too often we let things remain and we just start reminiscing on them, contemplating on them, and it ruins the relationship. Go to the person and correct it. And if you need someone to come along and help be an arbiter between you two, do that. But work through these problems. I probably spent too much time on that, but we need to be about catching the foxes before the relationship and even during the relationship. So going on, verse 16, she says, my beloved is mine and I am his. He feeds his flock among the lilies. My beloved is mine and I am his. This shows one man, one woman for life. Not I belong to you and a few other people. Not you belong to me and a few other people. You have one man, one woman for life, and this is where we find happiness. We need to understand that when we get married, we belong to each other. And that is a significant point that people need to understand. We must have commitment. Romans chapter 7, starting in verse 1. Do you not know, brothers, for I speak to those who know the law, that the law is master of a person as long as he lives. For the married woman is bound by law to her husband while he lives. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law of the husband. So we are bound to our spouse as long as we live. They own us. This is what we pledge in marriage. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5, starting in verse 1, it says, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they do evil. Do not be rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be quick to utter a word before God. For God is in heaven, and you are on earth. Therefore let your words be few. For a dream comes with many cares, but the voice of a fool with many words. When you make a vow to God, do not delay in fulfilling it, for he takes no pleasure in fools. Fulfill what you vow. It is better that you not vow than to vow and not fulfill it. So when we marry, we make a vow before God, and he takes no pleasure in fools. And a dream comes when we're concerned about many things, with many cares. Some translations say with much business or much work. We have to be working toward fulfilling our dreams. If we want a good marriage, it's going to take work. But words just show a fool. If you just spoke those vows and you don't mean it, you are a fool, and God takes no pleasure in fools. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, starting verse 2, well, I should mention verse 1, where it says it's good for a man not to touch a woman. That is talking about the present time and the persecution they're about to go through. Throughout the Bible, we see it's good for a man and woman to be together. It's not good for a man to be alone, and so forth. But in verse 2, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. The husband must fulfill the obligation to his wife, likewise also the wife to the husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not defraud one another, except perhaps by agreement for a time, in order that you may devote yourself to prayer. And then you should be together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So notice, my beloved belongs to me, I belong to my beloved. We are owned by each other. Your body is not your own, it is your wife's. 1 Corinthians 7:39, a wife is bound for as long a time as her husband lives. But if her husband dies, she's free to marry whomever she will, only in the Lord. All of life, you are bound to your wife. You're bound to your husband. You are obligated to fulfill the roles for each other, to each other. And the spouse comes first. A lot of times, the greatest rival to the husband is the children. Mothers long to please and help their children. But children are temporary. The spouse comes first. That's what these verses teach. And again, you could apply this to the church in Christ. We belong to Christ, and Christ belongs to us. And I think that's a beautiful way to apply this. My beloved is mine, and I am his. The fact that he feeds his flock among the lilies, various interpretations have been given for this. But he is taking care of business, and he is gentle. He is lovely. I'm not real sure exactly what to make of that. But my beloved is mine, and I am his. And then the last verse we're going to look at. The woman speaks and tells her beloved, until the day breaks and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountains of Bether. So until the day breaks is saying that the relationship, as I understand this, the relationship is going to be postponed for a little while. It's still night on the relationship. We can't start the day of our being together. He wants her to come with him. She's saying, no, we need to catch the little foxes. There are things that need to happen. Until the day breaks, until we can start our relationship, until the shadows flee away, until night is over, a new day is coming, until that time, she says, turn, my beloved, go away from here. Be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of Bether. Now, there is no such place as the mountains of Bether or Bether. I don't know how you pronounce it. While some commentators see this as her desiring him to be like a young stag upon her breast, and we see similar situations throughout the book in chapter 4 and verse 6, chapter 8 and verse 14. It seems to me like that's not what she's saying. She's saying it's time for us to separate. She is asking him to be anxious for the reuniting. Be like a gazelle or a young stag, eager and wanting to be together on the mountains of Bether. Bether actually means separation or division. And so while we're apart, you be anxious to come back to me. So I don't think he's going on a specific journey or anything. She's just saying, while we're apart, she needs to be longing for him. He needs to be longing for her. This is the only place the word Bether occurs in the Old Testament. But I do think it's interesting that another word from the same form is, or another form of this word, is used in Genesis 15, verse 10, and twice, Jeremiah 34, verse 18, and then again in verse 19. And this word refers to divisions of an animal that were cut in two when they were cutting a covenant. When you made a covenant in those days, a lot of times you would cut animals in two and you would walk between the animals. And I've been told that the idea was, if I break this covenant, let it be done to me just like we did to these animals. Let me be cut in two. And those are the only places this word occurs. And so it might be saying, you be like a gazelle or young stag on the mountains of separation while we're away. But remember the covenant. Remember what you said. You want to be with me. Remember that. And so we are to see Christ eager to be with us as well in our relationship with Christ. When we are separated from the ones we love, we need to be eager. And we're going to see a little more later on in chapter 3. But I have really enjoyed this study. I hope you have too. Going through this couple's relationship in the Song of Solomon, I always want to end by telling you how to contact us. You can contact us by phone, 1-844, the word 4, F-O-R-T-G-R-N, the Gospel Radio Network. That's 1-844-367-8476. Or you can email us, mornings@tgrn.org. You can email me, Stephen, S-T-E-V-E-N, @tgrn.org. We would love to hear from you. I hope that you have enjoyed this lesson, and I hope we'll get to be together again soon. I do appreciate you listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.